From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the International Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, Book Song, where we create a unique song to complement your book, and our newest Book Blessings, a personalized way to set intentions for your book or your books. This is the Authors on Fire podcast, and I am Pat Rulo. Today, I have a recent Firebird Book Award winner to share with you. He is Kent Priori, and he is the debut author of The Monsters Among Us. He writes dark literature where romanticism meets modern psychology for a hopeful depiction of inner struggle and the human ability to endure. He is a fierce advocate for mental health awareness and for greater acceptance of neurodivergence. For this reason, themes of mental health are pronounced and ever present in his work, both the devastating and the hopeful aspects of it. He graduated with honors from Bard College with a BA in the written arts, and is a proud marginalized voice in the neurodivergent community. Welcome to the Authors on Fire podcast, Kent.
Thanks for having me, Pat.
Oh, it's my pleasure. My pleasure. One thing I didn't mention in your bio, you have some help. You have the cutest little dog and cat, I guess. That...
Yes, I do.
What a cute little face he has. What is his name? Poe?
Poe, as in Edgar Allan.
Edgar Allan Poe. Oh my gosh. And your cat?
Yeah, her name is Yakutia.
Oh gosh. Doesn't it help to have these little buddies around?
Absolutely. They make life chaotic, but it's totally worth it.
Oh, absolutely. I started out with 13 cats, and I have 10 now. And
wow, my fiance would love that.
Well, I'm not ready to share any of these. These people, people say that they rescue animals. I truly believe that they rescue us.
Oh, 100% they do.
Yep. I've been rescued. All right, my friend. Well, congratulations on winning the Firebird Book Awards.
Thank you so much. It's a great honor. I poured my heart and soul into this book, 6 years of my life. So for it to be recognized is, well, it means more than I could say in words.
I get that because I hear that often. All righty. So your bio says you are a marginalized voice in the neurodivergent community. I know we need to dig into that just a little bit so that we can get a better feel for who you are as an author and why you write as you do.
Absolutely. Well, by marginalized group, by a member of that marginalized group, I mean that I am neurodivergent, specifically someone who deals with bipolar disorder. I'm sure we will cover the fact that I don't like the word disorder, but that bleeds into how I wrote The Monsters Among Us, because the main character, Seth, also deals with bipolar disorder. This is a core of his tumultuous upbringing and origins.
Mm-hmm. Give us a little peek into the storyline and what folks can expect when they pick up your copy of your book.
Well, the book starts very, very much like the plot of The Truman Show, if anybody's familiar, that Jim Carrey movie where the main character finds out that his entire life was an orchestration of some TV show, and he didn't realize it until well into adulthood. The Monsters Among Us begins very similarly in the sense that Seth, the main character, finds out that his entire upbringing has been the orchestration of malevolent purposes, malevolent forces such as demons, grotesque gods, and other supernatural entities beyond his understanding. And once that that perceived truth crumbles away and he finds the greater, more real world outside of it, he finds that there are monsters to combat, very real, very external monsters that are also a metaphor for the monsters that he is struggling within, his inner demons as somebody with bipolar disorder. And through combating them and overcoming them, he is therefore overcoming himself. And this is very much a journey of self-acceptance and understanding of neurodivergence so one can be better in the long run.
You talk about neurodivergence and the monsters among us. I would imagine that everybody has monsters among us, but maybe just more heightened if you have something that is considered, and I don't like the word either, a disorder.
Absolutely, I agree with that. Everyone is dealing with something. And that's partly why I wanted to write this book. Seth has bipolar disorder, and it also has a large cast of other characters that are dealing with one thing or another. And anybody with neurodivergence will probably be able to pick them out. And I wanted to write a book with such heavy neurodivergent representation because they're just... quite honestly, isn't enough of it. There isn't enough representation for people like me. There is some, a very famous one being The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath, but there isn't enough, and we could always have more. Everyone deserves to be seen and loved and heard, and that's why I wrote this book. I wanted to help people like me feel heard and seen while also writing a narrative that is so deeply immersive and cinematic, viscerally cinematic, that the reader, even if they're not someone who deals with neurodivergence, and all the better for it, will be placed into the headspace of someone dealing with the most chaotic time of their life, dealing with bipolar disorder, and therefore will come out the other end of reading this novel having understood it a bit more. Mm-hmm. And the book is there to build awareness and all that.
It's one thing to read something detached, and then it's quite another to read it and actually feel it and be a part of it. And that's where I think your book succeeds.
Yes, I agree. That's why I specifically wrote it in this very meticulously crafted way. It's one thing to read a story about someone who deals with depression. It's another thing to feel that depression, mm-hmm. because all too often... one of humanity's great, great faults is that we lack empathy and we do not understand things until we first go through them ourselves. And when you're a neurotypical person who doesn't experience depression and anxiety, well, that makes the lives of people who do very difficult, because it makes it very hard to find people who not only understand and see and hear and love us, but actually want to give us the time of day, which is why I wrote this book to, again, force the reader into that headspace so they can understand what it's like.
Yes, yes. And you just said something golden. You really cannot feel and know what somebody is going through until and unless you actually go through it yourself. Mm-hmm. My husband passed away about 14 weeks ago. And so...
oh, I'm so sorry.
Thank you. I am sorry too. And I'm going through this grieving period that is just beyond anything I ever imagined. And I look back and think how shallow I have been in the past when somebody else informs me that somebody passed away or their pet passed away. And then you send the typical, oh, I'm sorry, I'm thinking of you and all of that. But when you're in the midst of whatever it is, now you can appreciate it for truly what it is, and hopefully then reach out to others and make their world better, because I am now experiencing the same kind of pain.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there are some in current American politics that might disagree, but empathy is a vital aspect of humanity, and life, this world we live in is cruel enough on its own. Pain is a promised thing. We will always find, become traumatized for one reason or another, and it helps to have a helping hand. It helps to have people actually understand, people to actually be there for you, truly, mm-hmm. not superficially, like you said.
Yes. So when you're portraying the character of Seth or others in the novel, being that you were calling on aspects of yourself, did that help you write it, or did it add a little layer of difficulty to it?
It helped and hurt. sure, yes. It gave me things to draw upon, and that is always easier when you're not just making everything up and you're actually taking real world experiences that are so deeply ingrained in your soul, yes. But because of that, his character was a bit frustrating at times, to be honest. I love him to death, and I love this book, and I loved writing it, but because it was so close to home, writing his character like really hurt. It also, like, I was writing it from a standpoint of someone who has grown past these feelings that he's feeling. So it was also frustrating in the sense of like, come on, Seth, do better. And thankfully that is what the book is about, him doing better. So yeah, it helped, but also hurt.
I figured there's so much. It runs so deep. How did you go about finding a publisher for this book? Did you consider self-publishing? Just give us a little peek into that publishing process.
It was difficult, I'm not gonna lie. Any debuting author, recently debuting author, or any author not yet debuted will can vouch for how hellish the publishing industry can be, how precarious it can be. Because it was very difficult to find a publisher for this book. I queried it over 3 years, I believe, over 300 rejections, and well, for the most part, most people didn't want it because, again, like I said, despite there being a great example of literature with neurodivergent representation, the Bell Jar, and despite the fact that I believe every author worth their salt has dealt with something, some sort of neurodivergence, like all the great minds throughout history, Edgar Allan Poe, Sylvia Plath, Hemingway, these brilliant authors, they have all dealt with something. So it baffled me to find that publishing didn't want a book about mental health and neurodivergence. They didn't want something experimental and different and strange and viscerally immersive and cinematic when considering the subject matter. So it was hard. It was a long journey, and I almost gave up. I truly did. I did consider self-publishing for a moment, but it's very expensive to take upon yourself. I didn't have the money for it, and yes, it works for some people. So, if that's you listening in, I'm glad it's working for you. And if you want to do self-publishing, go for it. But I didn't necessarily see the strengths or the perks in paying for it all myself, doing the marketing all myself, doing everything all myself, and not even have the validation, the extra like step of prestige is not the right word, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
The brand of a publisher's
Right.
logo on my book to help me sell it. I wanted to try to do it that way, and I'm glad I persisted, but I didn't persist without almost giving up, which I actually have a very lovely story about. I was talking with my then girlfriend, now fiance, about I was venting my woes about the publishing process, and I was really seriously considering shelving the book. But she convinced me not to do that. She convinced me to keep trying, and somebody will want it eventually. 2 weeks later, I kid you not, on Valentine's Day, I signed the contract with Rowan Trust Publishing. So call it fate or whatever, it eventually worked out.
Thank goodness for your girlfriend, right?
Yes, yeah, my now
Your
fiance,
fiance, yes.
I love her to death, and I cannot wait to marry her. She's amazing.
Oh gosh, I love that. I love that. You found a good one.
Really did.
Good for you. You mentioned earlier that it took you 6 years to complete this book and then 3 years to find a publisher. I am sure through this long journey, your writing style has evolved. Let's just talk about the evolution of day one to where you are now.
Oh, it absolutely has. Not only has my writing style evolved and taken on many different flavors, so to speak, but it has also evolved in the form of what the in the form the book took. It originally was a short story, believe it or not, that I wrote for English 101. I had a professor who offered career advice, and at the time, I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do. But he offered career advice. I met him for office hours, and we talked about career possibilities. And we kept coming back to the fact that amidst my very lonely, very, very pained bipolar youth. I always found solace and comfort in storytelling and narrative, in escapism, in that sense. So he decided to task me with writing a short story as my final project for the class. And when I did, and he told me he gave me his thoughts, he said he loved it, told me that there was the makings of a 200-page novel and I should expand it. So I took him at his word and I expanded it. And that what he thought was going to be a 200-page novel has become a 360-page novel with three more books coming. So that was good advice on his part. But then I went on, when going off to a different college, and I submitted, when submitting the first chapter of that book, after I first wrote it, they tore it to shreds. I found out this was a very methodical, purposeful tearing to shreds. It was helped to, you know, help grow and learn from my writing mistakes. But they did. I got into the writing program at my college, but they really tore it apart. So afterwards, I thought to myself, okay, I'm gonna throw this out. Never look at this draft again and start fresh. And I did, and I wrote that second draft for my senior project at Bard College, and to great acclaim. My advisor, Joseph O'Neill, the winner of the Penn Faulkner Award for Fiction in 2009, he called the book a marvel. He gave me an honors grade. Another professor, who sadly died recently, said, and verbatim, "In all my years of teaching, I've never read such an extraordinary piece of work." Mm-hmm. So this is basically, I'm not saying this to brag, or but more so say perseverance is key. Effort, hard work, long-term hard work, and don't be afraid to throw out that first draft. Sometimes you need to write it once to tell the story to yourself, to learn what the story actually is.
Mm-hmm. That is excellent advice, and difficult, painful.
Oh yes. Oh yes. Because again, I wrote it for years out and read it for years again.
Oh my gosh. Well, talking about pain, the idea of transmuting pain into strength is central to Seth's journey. Actually, it's central to all of our journeys.
Yes.
What message do you hope readers take away about resilience and the human ability to endure?
Well, I took that universal experience. I made that the forefront of the book because of the neurodivergent elements as well. There is far too, things are better now, especially with when people experience anxiety or depression. Things are still a little rough when you deal with bipolar, especially as a man, when that can be a scary thing to see, a very emotional, angry man. But it is difficult to live with neurodivergence and live in a society that constantly tells you that you are not enough, that you have to be on, you have to, you know, constantly be on meds. You have to constantly be in therapy. You will never have a job of any significance because of what you deal with. These are all things that I was told. And I, at a certain point, I had enough and I wanted to prove everyone wrong. And that is the perseverance of turning pain into strength came from that. If I have to live with something that causes chronic pain and suffering, I want to flip the values of society on its head and see it as a good thing. And there are good things to be found in neurodivergence. There, like I mentioned before, some of the greatest names in history: Sylvia Plath, Edgar Allan Poe, Hemingway. These are all people who dealt with like severe depression at the very least. And look at what they've done. They produced great, amazing, timeless works of art that we will be reading for thousands of years. All because of what they dealt with. Because they're in depression, there is a power of critical thinking. In anxiety, there is the desire to be a perfectionist and multitask multiple things at once. For those dealing with neurodivergence, if you learn to discipline yourself and you learn to wade your way through the darkness, there, I do believe that there are gifts to be found on the other end. And that is the narrative at its core in The Monsters Among Us.
Mm-hmm. Good things to be found. Yes. So you talked about it at the beginning. Why disorder? Why are we still using this word?
I ask myself that all the time. I mean, I guess we're starting to veer away from it with the greater acceptance of the word neurodivergence, which mm-hmm. I like a lot better because mm-hmm. it just implies that the brain works differently from quote unquote normal people. Mm-hmm. Different is not bad. Different is good, mm-hmm. especially when you're a writer, an artist of some sort. You want to be different. You want to create new things and think differently, present your unique perspective to the world. So that's a good thing. We're moving in the right direction. But growing up with the words illness and disorder, sickness, it really did make the entire experience of being bipolar infinitely harder than it needed to be. And anybody with bipolar and everybody else who doesn't is also aware that bipolar is a very difficult thing to deal with on its own. So that's saying something. But it left me with a feeling that, okay, there is something intrinsically broken about me. And that left me feeling broken. It left me to pick up the pieces of my life and during my early 20s. And that's why I didn't go to college until I was 25, because I had so much to do, so much to work on, and in regards to my own self-confidence, because I was told my entire life that I would never be able to amount to anything of significance. And it wasn't until, again, my mid-20s that I had repaired myself enough and, like Seth, got angry enough at that idea, at society's definition of me, that I decided I'm going to prove them wrong. And now I've gone to college, I've gotten my degrees, I've written this book, I've written many more, and I'm also someone who deals with bipolar disorder completely on his own with no meds, because I want to preface this with saying that if meds work for you, fantastic. I'm happy for you. I love that for you. But there are a lot of people, myself included, who are prone to the terrible side effects that make life worse. On the meds than it would be off of the meds, mm-hmm. which is counterintuitive, to say the least. So I'm one of those people who had to try to find his own way, try to balance it out on his own through sheer willpower and time and effort and work. And that also greatly facilitated the narrative of The Monsters Among Us, because I figured out a way, but there are still so many people I even know personally who deal with similar things who have not found their way. And I think that goes back to the fact that society has told us all our lives that we can't and won't and will not. And so I wanted to write a book that could tell people that, no, they can and will and should. I wanted to empower people rather than knock them down.
And so what this book is bringing out are the hopeful aspects, so that people reading will realize that they have hope and a way out, just as you did. Although that calls on such an inner strength, and I know we're all stronger than we give ourselves credit for, but I'm wondering if there are some who will be listening thinking, I'm happy that worked for him, but how do you maintain that strength for weeks and years and to actually pull yourself out for the better part as you have?
That is excellent thing to bring up, because I have had people tell me that. But the thing is, like you said, we are all stronger than we perceive ourselves to be. So it's really just the choice of believing that you can. That's the first step. To stay strong for so many years, I would hate for that to imply that I didn't have any downward spirals there and didn't have to pick myself up again. That is not realistic. Life is an endless cycle of ups and downs. You're always going to struggle. You're always going to have high periods as well. And I did, and I had to relearn all the things that are taught in the Monsters Among Us again and again. But it helps to also have a community. It helps to have people to support you. It helps to get a dog. My dog helps quite a bit.
Yes.
My fiance helps quite a bit. And now I don't have those downward spirals anymore. So, to anybody thinking that they can't do things, do this on through willpower alone. Well, I mean, I never claimed that it was easy. I never claimed that it was not a long-term struggle, but you can do it. You just have to, again, teach yourself to do it. Again, discipline, long-term effort and work. And I hope the Monsters Among Us might inspire and show that, and shine a path, shine a light on that path to get there.
Absolutely, it will. And your writing of it is a gift to the world. So I so appreciate that you chose to share it with us at the Firebird Book Awards and that we had this opportunity to just take a tiny little peek into this. Before we begin to wrap up, you said you've got a couple more in the works, a couple more books coming up.
Absolutely. The follow-up to The Monsters Among Us, the sequel, comes out on May 5th next year. And there's going to be two books after that that I can't talk about just yet and don't have release dates just yet, but they are coming. And I want people to know that despite it being a series, The Monsters Among Us doesn't end on any cliffhangers. It doesn't. It doesn't it's not just a one section of a story. It is fully self-contained and it finishes. There's a proper conclusion. Everything wraps up beautifully at the end. But the world building, the philosophical depths of this world that I created just was so expansive that a couple years after finishing the book, I felt the characters nagging at me like they had another story to tell. And so I told that story, and In the Wake of Gods coming out in May on May 5th is a second story set in the same universe. But again, every story in this series is going to be self-contained. You could pick it up anywhere you'd like, but I think you would get the most out of it if you start with The Monsters Among Us.
All right. Well, this is some goodness to look forward to, Kent. Thank you. If you
You're
would,
welcome.
then give us a contact information where folks can find out more about you, contact you, and get a copy of your book.
Absolutely. You can learn all about me at kentpriori.com. You can find me on all socials across the board, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Threads, at Kent Priori. TikTok is kent.priori.author. And you can buy my book at Amazon, Barnes and Noble, anywhere they have books. And I implore you to check it out. It's been rated very highly. It has won the Firebird Book Award, like you said. And in addition to that, it has been nominated for the Shirley Jackson Award. So I don't think you would like to miss out on this one.
No, you would not want to miss out on this one. This would make a great pick for a book club. There's just so much to learn and dissect. I hope that folks head over to your website, kentpriori.com, find it on Amazon, wherever fine books are sold. Kent, thank you for sharing your insights in the extraordinary world of the Monsters Among Us. I have to say that your courage in exploring difficult themes and advocating for mental health and neurodivergence makes this story both gripping and meaningful. Thank you for sharing with us today.
You're so welcome, and thank you so much for having me.